Welcome to Leaders Making a Difference, the podcast that dives into the stories behind the changemakers. I'm your host, Jeannie Frazier, and together we'll have candid conversations that explore their challenges and celebrate their impact. Welcome to Leaders Making a Difference. I'm so excited to be here with a special guest today, Malaika Simmons. She is the Chief Operating Officer at the National Alliance Against Disparities in Patient Health, one of the most brilliant and creative people I've been around. NADPH is a national nonprofit. They're a health research org that applies scientific research and technology along with community education, outreach, and advocacy to help reduce health disparities and improve health outcomes for our nation. And just a note, I'm Jeannie Frazier. I am also CEO of Vitalink, and we are a purpose-driven firm that builds innovative partnerships for business success and social impact. So welcome, Malaika. You know, we're excited. We are also partnering with NADPH to bridge the gap to advanced healthcare with other partnerships with orgs. And Malaika, in a few sentences, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and what inspires you about your work?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for this platform. I jump at the opportunity to talk more about health equity and reducing disparities anytime I can. So this is fantastic. So thank you. So I am Malaika Simmons. I'm Malaika, as in I like a Malaika. And I have been in health adjacent field for almost 25 years. I absolutely love everything about empowering people to know more about their own health, to take an advocacy stance in their healthcare. And so that's what I've been doing in different means and ways for a very long time. So I come from pharmaceutical, the pharmaceutical field. Actually, I say I grew up in pharmaceuticals somewhat, because that was my early career, was at the pharma companies. I was in regulatory. I've been in clinical research and public health. I've often been policy or training. So I'm always like the person behind the books and the words and the writing of really just translating medical and technical ideas into digestible pieces that the greater public, consumers and patients and communities can understand. So it's kind of been my passion work. I'm also a human-centered design strategist, which is, I love design thinking, and design thinking is just helping humans that make the products understand how humans that use the products and policies and programs and services actually want to be engaged. And so that's a lot of what I do here at NADPH as well.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I noticed on your website when you talk about translating complicated subjects to make it more easily digestible in little bits, the website nadph.org talks about where people live or their age or gender or even ethnicity shouldn't dictate the quality of their health care. And, you know, as a woman, that hit me. Like, that statement stopped me in my tracks. I've experienced, you know, great healthcare, but I've also experienced not being taken seriously when I tried to convey symptoms that were going on. And that just tells me that this may be a common challenge. And, you know, talk a little bit more about that. Is it common, and how is NADPH helping people to be able to deal with those kind of issues?
We are very focused on including people with lived experiences in all aspects of healthcare innovation. So a lot of times the powers that be, so to speak, see patients as numbers. They see patients as an end. I'm going to provide this, you know, program, I'm going to provide this drug, I'm going to provide this thing, and then the patients are consumers. Well, before you become a patient, you're just a everyday person in the community. Before you get sick, you're just living out there, living your life, right? And yes, there are those who are more susceptible to sickness and illness and injury. But we all, in everyday life as Americans go through all sorts of different things where we are seen as vulnerable, or we could be seen as vulnerable. And I think NADPH's goal is to make sure that in those most vulnerable moments of everyday human life, which is the moments that you find yourself sick or injured or needing healthcare, that you understand what's going on, what's happening to you. You understand what the implications are of how things are created for your benefit or not. Sometimes they're just not. And you make a very good point, right? As a woman, I'm going to borrow RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and say, you know, women belong in all the places where decisions are made, right? And so if you think about it, women make the majority of health decisions for the family. Women make the majority of buying decisions for the family. And so we need those folks that do the most work to protect their families to understand what it is that they're getting into, and that you have the right to ask doctors questions, and you have the right to know, well, you know, what the policy implications are. Because every time someone votes something in on the Hill, guess what? It's going to trickle down into your healthcare, whether it's your healthcare dollars, whether or not you have a hospital in your neighborhood. All of these things are generated. The conversations are generated in all sorts of parts and pieces of the ecosystem. And so our job is to make sure that people are just aware of what they are.
That's great. So from the other perspective, so I think I agree that people need to be able to advocate for themselves and speak up. And, you know, we should be having conversations in the most important place, which one of the most important places is about your health. So on the other side of it, you know, whether it's a hospital, a pharma, medical device, whatever it may be, on the other side of the providers who are helping, what could they maybe learn or understand about this idea with health equity and where people live or their age or gender or ethnicity shouldn't impact their quality of care? What pieces should they take away from this, and, you know, steps should they take?
That's a great question. I think being open to having the conversation, it goes back to the people with lived experience. So again, you're speaking about industries and organizations, but they're made up of people, right? And so those people should just be more cognizant that there are other people with differing opinions and diverse outlooks and approaches to how healthcare could be implemented, and opening doors for people. Because yes, it's one thing to say people by themselves should, you know, step up and ask questions and all that sort of thing, but to whom were they asking the questions to? How do they know where to go to be heard? And so I think it's the onus is on the industry, the healthcare industry, the data providers. It's on them to open the door so that communities and people are welcomed and feel like they have a voice in deciding their healthcare or the healthcare policy. So the thing that I think that those organizations can do is to be more intentional about actually, like, not just checking off a box, but actually bringing people in across diverse communities. And one thing I want to be really, really clear on too, a lot of times we think of talking to communities, sometimes it is seen as almost charitable, as this, like, you know, well, we should be talking to, you know, homeless people and poor people. And I mean, it just really devolves into this not very helpful dialogue, where you really should be elevating people across all walks of life, no matter whether they live wherever they live, rural, city, whatever age. If you're talking about the care for children and infants, if you're talking about the care for elderly, whomever you are, wherever you are in the country, you should not expect to have a lesser case, or lesser care in our healthcare system. And so if that's the case, then what do our organizations do to make sure that that's the case, that happens?
That's great. I want to dig a little deeper now into your work. And is there a story or a project that maybe stands out for you that's hit home? You know, what was the challenge you've dealt with, and maybe your approach and the results? Can you give us kind of an example of what we've been talking about in action?
Yes. So recently we presented at the APHA, the American Public Health Association's annual meeting, several we were on some panels, we did a poster. So just several opportunities for us to really talk about the work that we do. And one of which that really underlines what we're talking about here is some work that we did with the CDC Foundation in support of the surveys and the data that's available through CDC. So CDC is a major institution in our country, right? And there's lots and lots of gigabytes or tetrabytes or what have you of data that's flowing through there anytime about who? About the communities, the people out here in the country, no matter where they are. So you would think, well, it's just data. Like, let's just collect the data. Well, it's not quite that simple. You have all sorts of intersectional identities of people who may or may not want to give you their data. There's lots of reasons, historical and otherwise, why people are non-trustful of government and government agencies. Or it could be just lack of understanding. What are you using it for? How am I going to benefit from it? So we did some work recently that really underscored the need to speak to communities in a way and in a language and in a posture that they want to be communicated with. And it was fantastic project work we did, like I said, with the CDC Foundation, through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, just to really get to the heart of what communities are saying about their healthcare, what they're saying about their data, how they feel about having these conversations. And one of the biggest takeaways that we got in, and we kind of laugh about it internally, is there's a series of questions that gets asked, a medical survey, a clinical survey, asking about your health and this, that, and the other. And you might, one of the questions is asking people how they feel about a particular thing. And interestingly enough, across several different demographics, the phrase, some type of way. I don't know. I just feel some type of way. And it was, we kind of laughed about it, but we said, you know, you don't know until you feel it. That some type of way is that uneasy feeling that you get once either someone asks you an inappropriate question about your health, or you go to get healthcare and you're either turned away, you don't feel like you're being respected in the process. So that feeling some type of way, we want to stop that. We want nobody who reaches out to get healthcare in their time of need to feel some type of way about dealing with our healthcare system. And so I think that just underscores the goal, right, for healthcare advocates and others to make sure that everyone feels centered in whatever identity they are. Hey, I'm an elderly person that's living in a home, and I just want to make sure, you know, that I'm getting the best care. Don't leave me in a corner somewhere. Or I'm the caregiver, you know, who's taking care of someone with Parkinson's or another thing. How do I make sure that my loved one is being seen as an individual and it's not just another number when you're creating drugs? So all of that goes back to the exact same thing, is that people need to be seen for who they are and how they are, not just as healthcare symptoms or not just as data.
Wow. I think, you know, again, looking at it from the other side as well, if you're a business out there and let's say you're treating diabetes, there's so many people who are untreated, and there's some people who probably been or undiagnosed, and there's some people who probably been diagnosed who aren't getting the treatment they need because of whatever reason. And, you know, some of it may be that mistrust that you've talked about, but, you know, wow, with those communities, if you could just have a different kind of conversation, maybe they wouldn't feel that some type of way. Maybe they'd, you know, see companies in there, you know, to help them and for their own benefit. And there's just really something in there about having those kind of conversations that are more meaningful and not just checking off a box.
And you just said something that was important too, is how they see those companies. So most people know who American Red Cross is, right? And maybe March of Dimes and some of the bigger named organizations. But as a healthcare provider or as a nonprofit, if the first time the community hears from you or knows who you are is when you're asking them for something, there's a problem, right? You want them to be in a study. You want them to be on a research protocol, whatever it is. If that's the first time that they've heard from you or about you, then that's a problem. And oftentimes we think that we are doing, as nonprofits, we go, oh, we're going to do some trust building. How about some trust earning, right? Like you trust building kind of puts the onus on the community. The, of course you should trust us. Look, we have your best interests at heart, right? Show me as a community member, show me why I should trust you. Come to the community before you need us. That's what creates trustworthy interactions. And as trust building, again, is not, and it's not something that can be done overnight. And I know you have a grant or a contract or what have you, and you have all your timelines, but communities don't care about your timeline, right? So figure a way to engage with them prior to the moment that you need something from them. And you'll be surprised at how more smoothly those relationships and those projects and programs actually get on.
I can absolutely imagine with that. So something else that we saw on your website, nadph.org, is a partnership ecosystem that you talk about that kind of reaches across government, academia, nonprofits, industry allies. Can you talk about why it's important to have that kind of an ecosystem in this area of health equity?
Yes, it's like building a sturdy house, right? You need your foundation, you need your electricity, you need your water and your plumbing. Like you need all of those different things, and the doors and the windows and all the different parts and pieces. So in building an ecosystem, we want to make sure that we have everyone at the table. So that's the philanthropic organizations, that's the healthcare systems, that's the data providers, that's the technologists, the people who are building the systems. And so we believe that having an ecosystem with everyone aligned to a similar goal, but contributing in the way that is most relevant to their industry, it makes us a stronger ecosystem and gives much more to the communities at hand, because they can just walk in and they know that we've considered all the points, or at least we're having the conversations, because of course we're not doing everything right, or we don't know all the answers, but at least we're talking to Congress, you know, we're having congressional briefings. So there's the political, there's the philanthropic, there's the community, all the parts and pieces we believe in putting in and having those considerations be made in an entire ecosystem.
Wow, that's a lot to bring all those groups together. That's amazing work.
It is a lot. We've done convenings, and we've done, like I said, congressional briefings. If you say healthcare for all, that literally that means all. Like, all. And all is just all is big. The N is very big, right? There's a lot of people, a lot of parts and pieces that are required to sustain or maintain healthcare in this country. And so if there are a lot of pieces, then we just have to talk to a lot of people. And it's a constant thought of who else, what haven't we thought about, right?
Yeah.
Who's not in the conversation, who's not at the table.
Wow. So you've talked a lot about outreach, and obviously that's important. You can't AI that. You can't AI, you know, interaction with people and getting, you know, that kind of relationship that you need. But there is a role for AI and machine learning in health equity. And I would ask, you know, how are you guys, that is something I noticed that you're using to help solve health equity issues. So it's not only that community outreach and engagement, but you're using like the latest technology to get this done. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. So I lovingly call all of our technologists here the beboop boppers, and they know what I mean. I don't code at all, but we have world-renowned folks here at NADPH that their strength and their expertise is in AI modeling and machine learning and data science and helping us to understand how we can build predictive models in healthcare. So we still need the community always. So throughout this conversation, you'll always hear me talking about how we need the community and people with lived experiences, but it's contextual, right? And so if we're going to build something with AI, we're going to move, not if, let me take that back. There is
when.
No,
yeah.
We are. The AI train has left, right? Like that ship has sailed. It is already happening. And so what's important about that is back to the communities that they're understanding what it even means. What is AI? I lovingly call us the AI whisperer sometimes. I have to tell people, like, you know, when you go to Amazon and you buy that black dress and then it recommends black shoes, right? So what is artificial
And a purse,
right?
yeah.
And the earrings and all of that, right? It's predicting buying decisions. So it could be used for such greater things than making you look really cute when you go out, right? There are substantial things that AI can do for humans, but there has to be stewardship of the AI. And so that's where NADPH comes in as well, because, okay, great, we're moving forward with technology, but what does that mean? And what are the ethics behind it? And how do we build in biases that are appropriate? Because we won't go into a lot of detail, but not all bias is bad, right? Bias just tells you that you're going to skew one way or the other. And it may be for a reason. There may be an overcorrection that's needed because people have been historically left out. There's all sorts of considerations and reasons for why AI should work in one way or the other. We just have to make sure that it's not harmful, right? We want to mitigate harm and increase the benefit to the extent possible. And so from a technology standpoint, not just with AI, but with all emerging technologies that touch the healthcare system, that's what NADPH is concerned with. How do we make sure that as these things, not when, not if, but as these things are being rolled out and touching populations, how are they doing so in a way that is not harmful, number one, and secondarily is creating benefit and causing better outcomes for patients nationwide?
Absolutely. I love learning about different things that are going on. I heard the other day about a new app that's come around to study some changes in eyesight for diabetics. And it's done on your phone, literally, instead of in this, big room that housed this $80,000 machine that a lot of doctors might or might not have been able to afford. And, maybe they were, not able to get the people in there as often, and this new machine can give them, that ability, or the new app can give them that ability to have better access to information about their health for treatment decisions.
And
So,
technology is not the devil, right? It's
yeah.
it has to be wielded appropriately. We have to be stewards of it. There was a commercial during the Super Bowl, right, where one of the new phones has an application that allows people with limited vision to take pictures. So
I
it
saw
speaks
that,
to them,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
The
There are
science.
two people in the frame. There's what, yeah.
So I could have wrote that commercial. I could have written it. I could have written it because I knew where they were going with it. But I thought it was fantastic just in terms of this is how technology actually touches people's lives. So I think that commercial did a really good job of taking technology and something that's kind of abstract or
Yeah.
bigger than people can understand. And that's what I meant earlier about making things digestible, to put into, hey, you have a limited vision person with a spouse, and they're having a kid, and this is their life, and this is how you make their life and their quality of life better. So I love that commercial. I'm such a wonk when it comes to commercials. Like I'm always looking behind it. I'm like, oh, that's really good for that. But I thought it was really, really cool demonstration of how you can make technology accessible.
Yeah, true. I mean, so many people are worried about AI could take over the world, and who knows? But like you said, it can also do great things as long as there's community involvement and it's for good of people and stewardship and, all those other pieces. It's good to have an NADPH out there looking out for folks. That's important. So, what do you think? Is there one action that maybe our audience could take that could help make sure more people get access to quality health care?
So I wouldn't say there's one, maybe it's a two-parter, right? So I think the what is get involved, but that's a lot easier said than done, right? So I think the how is know who makes decisions. How do you get involved? You get involved by finding out who makes decisions that affect you and affect your health care. And at NADPH, we are constantly having conversations with decision makers. So reach out
So
to
if you're a decision maker out there, you need to be having a conversation with NADPH.
it's Exactly. We want to make sure that folks are their voices are at the table, even if they're not physically there. We live in a very digital world, right? So I mean, we understand that everybody can't go to town halls and everybody can't, you know, physically be in spaces, but make sure that the things that are important to you are in front of the people who are making the decisions. And the how is by knowing who those decision makers are. And that's another thing that NADPH works tirelessly to do, is to make sure that we disseminate that information to the public about who's making the decisions, who's doing what, and how they can be involved.
Well, that is great. You know, is there a free resource you can think of that could help direct people to, that they might be able to learn a little more? I mean, aside from nadph.org, which has some great information on it and ways to volunteer or help, you know, is there something else out there that you would recommend if people were wanting to learn more?
Yeah, so I mean, that's just it, nadph.org. And we do have a section on there that allows you to, you can donate to nadph.org. You can contact us so we can keep you in the loop. You can join our newsletter. So just get involved by getting in the conversation. And I would say, and we provide lots of resources to folks that are, you know, on the newsletter. We meet people at events all the time. We were a couple months ago, we were just at Shaw University for the HBCU Grow Conference, where we met lots of folks that are interested in AI from an educational institutional standpoint. So we are often on the ground. We're at baby showers and we're in community centers. So if you have an event that you're like, hey, I really need someone that can talk to the community about healthcare and help them understand, contact us, right? That is literally what we do.
Well, yeah. And I guess knowing that you've been everywhere and you're out, you know, in all these different places making an impact, I also noticed that you guys have been featured in Forbes, which is a huge accomplishment. So congratulations for that. And for those orgs who maybe read the article or you've seen this podcast and you want to step up your efforts, how could they partner with NADPH? What would be the process that they might go about, you know, at least contacting you or getting to know you?
Yes. So I feel my inbox is always open. So I can always be reached at simmons@nadph.org. And I can direct you to who's best to discuss whatever the topic is. But also, the Forbes article, like, Dr. Carlisle has done a tremendous job of just being, you know, that shepherd for technology and innovation and tying it to the healthcare crisis in the country, and the ways in which that kind of the ordinary people can get involved. So yeah, we're very proud of Dr. Carlisle. We're very proud of the Forbes article as well, just because it helps to highlight that there's a lot of things going on in technology. And He has been able to marry his subject matter expertise with his purpose-driven mission and goals. And like that's kind of the thing, right? When you can do what you love and be really good at it, like, that's like, the spot.
He gets that big picture. I mean, you look at his experience and it's, you know, it's amazing the kind of quality places that he's worked and, right, you know, on the medical side, but also on the business side and AI, like, you're right. He does have that, you know, 30,000 foot view that really allows, I think, for innovation, because you see things a little differently.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's maybe one question today that I should have asked you, but I didn't?
You know, I think this was a great conversation. I think people fundamentally understand the need for healthcare, right? This is kind of healthcare 101. People, no one is walking around going, I wish I was sick, or, you know, like, everybody knows what it feels like to not want to be sick.
Yeah. I wish they couldn't have a cure for cancer.
Dang, they're out here doing all sorts of great things when I just want to lay in bed. And maybe you do, right? But I think people fundamentally understand that they need healthcare. They may not understand how they go about getting it. And I think, I don't think there's any, the question I will pose, not to myself, but to each individual that's maybe hearing this, is who are the people that they want cared for? and how would they see them best being cared for, right? So if you can imagine that in your head, either it's you, your family, your loved ones, maybe it's your constituency, you know someone or someones that you want to make sure are living their best lives. And that's the question you should ask, are they and how might they, right? So if they're not, for whatever reason, let's figure a way to help them get there.
I think that is the perfect way to wrap up today. I mean, you couldn't have brought it around better. And we hope this information is going to help the people who are listening or watching and give you some ideas on how you can improve your org's outreach strategies and approach to health equity. And if you would like to learn more about partnering with NADPH, you can visit nadph.org. You can also find information on those partnerships at yourvitallink.com. And I would just ask you to join us again for Leaders Making a Difference and our next incredibly interesting leader that we'll be talking to. If you like this, just wait and see what's in store.